Egyptian. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. I'm your host for now, James Davenport.
Hello,
James.
Hello,
James. Get some excitement.
I know. Well, okay, I'm still sad.
We're all sad. We're very sad.
Put on your imaginary bow tie and pep yourself up.
That's what it is. I think he just ties it so tight that he's on the verge of suffocating at all times.
Yeah.
And he has to kind of stay lively, otherwise he will pass out and die. We're talking about Tom Marks, the host who left us. We miss you, buddy. We miss you, buddy. But we're going to carry on.
And
stick with us as the PC Gamer Show goes through some necessary, I think, growing pains. I have never been, well, I've hosted the show once or twice, but...
With no tension because you knew it was a temporary...
Exactly. Ride. I just, it was like the lost episodes of the PC Gamer Show. You can go find them on a dirty VHS somewhere, and they're just like awful, B-side, quality level things. But now I have to be somewhat professional and...
Do you though?
And, well... Yes.
I mean, we're putting this on the internet. It's not like we're going on network.
It's true.
I mean, I think almost more important than the loss of Tom is everyone is wondering, where is your beard?
I left my beard in San Francisco.
Your Twitter handle is my beard.
I know, I'm off brand, okay?
You're very off brand.
I'm off brand right now. But, sometimes to carve a canoe, a new canoe, you might already have a canoe. This is an awful metaphor.
A Montana metaphor?
I don't know. I'm making it up as I go. But sometimes to carve a new canoe, you need to grow, a new tree. And that requires planting a sapling and attending to the sapling and watching it grow and change over time in order to finally carve your masterpiece.
So by the time you're like 75, you can carve a
finally,
really, really
I'll carve
good
my new canoe.
Canoe.
I should introduce you guys. I'm here with Bo Moore, our technology editor. How you doing, Bo?
I'm doing well. How are you, James?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We'll see how it goes.
I'm
a little tense.
Don't panic.
Wes Fenlon.
Hello.
Our features editor. How you doing, man?
I'm not tired because I'm jazzed at the moment, but it's been a busy week.
Yeah, a lot of vacation happening. Not for us.
For everybody else.
Yeah, so we need to keep the website afloat, which requires juggling a few more tasks than normal. Mm-hmm. But we're doing it. And again, like I said, growing pains, we're going to change probably the format of the show in some ways over time, and presentation maybe, who knows? And if we have any quality hiccups, if you have any audio problems or if something's out of whack, please let me know. We're going to adjust and, try and keep the ship sailing smoothly best we can.
But one thing you can probably count on is we'll talk about PC games.
We're going to talk about computer games.
Most likely.
Yeah, definitely going to talk about computer games. And speaking of, what have you guys been playing? Who wants to kick it off? It's kind of a slow, it's the summer doldrums where...
Yeah, there's not really a ton coming out, a little bit here and there.
This is the brief calm before the storm.
There's a lot coming out.
Of holiday game season.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, Bo and I have both been playing Pyre, which maybe we should devote a segment to a little
later.
Yeah,
let's get to that in a bit. Have you guys been poking at anything else besides Pyre?
Not really. My standard games, Overwatch and Heroes of the Storm now have been my bread and butter for the most part. I'm pretty excited to try out. I haven't played it yet, but I am interested in playing Dream Daddy, which seems really cool.
I think I did the customization and like 5 minutes past that and had to quit. But can you kind of, for people who don't know, what the hell is Dream Daddy?
Dream Daddy is a dad dating simulator.
Yeah.
It is takes everything about the love and romance dating simulator that are typically very heterosexual focused.
Yes.
Or pigeon focused.
Or pigeon focused. There is one that predominantly involves pigeons. But pigeons aside, almost all are... heterosexual focused, whereas Dream Daddy is you're a dad and you are dating other dads.
Mm.
It is, by all accounts, everything I can tell, really cool. It's has a nice uplifting message. Mm-hmm. All of the dad dating seems to go very well. You have a nice relationship with your daughter. She's a young teenager, I believe.
Yeah.
And it just all seems very nice.
It is, and there's been a lot of positive kind of buzz surrounding the game. We have a review up So you can find that at pcgamer.com/reviews if you want to know more about it.
I feel like there should be a scene in Dream Daddy where your daddy shaves his beard off.
Yes.
And then your child, who I guess is a daughter, I don't know if that varies,
goes... I believe she's always...
goes crazy at the absence of your beard. That was a childhood experience I had when my dad shaved his beard off. I was like, who are you? What have you done?
Yeah, it's traumatizing.
One thing that is cool is you as the dad, you build your own dad at the beginning of the game, and the character creator is actually quite robust.
Yeah.
You can create some pretty diverse looking dads, as well as the cast of dads that you're courting is fairly diverse as well.
Also, if I don't want to dig for it for now, I'll put a link to it in chat here, but we put out a call for dads.
We did
put out a call for dads.
If you are playing Dream Daddy, we want to see your dads.
Dream
not,
dad.
Not your your dream dads. Your,
yes.
I or, mean, if you want to show us your real dads, yeah. Like, that's fine too. But
maybe ask his permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't just send us a picture of your dad, please. I'll post that in the chat. But we're going to put together a gallery of the best dads.
Yeah, the best dads.
So if you have a good dad, show us, and you might see it this weekend. Real quick, want to call out Aramord just subscribed. So thank you and welcome.
I think earlier we also had a resubscribe.
Oh, did we?
We may have right at the start
right at
of the
beginning.
Show.
Oh, who's this? Oh, Deej Bruce. Butts, of course. 3 months in a row. A fun member of the Discord. So thanks for hanging out and sticking with
you.
Us.
I got a game I can talk about a little bit. I've been playing a game called X-Morph Defense.
The hell is this?
X-Morph.
Which is not out
that
yet.
That name tells me nothing.
It looks about as edgy as it sounds.
Oh,
it looks
cool.
Like a game that would be called X-Morph.
Edgelord X-Morph. Edgelord Defense.
But it's actually pretty cool. So it's a tower defense game,
right,
in the vein of... I just blanked on the name of probably the most popular defense grid. Kind of feels like that at first, but it adds in two significant twists to that formula. One is a shmup element. So instead of just being this like omnipotent, you know, builder god putting down towers, you actually fly a ship around.
Cool.
And you need to very actively be shooting at the enemies coming at you, because your towers typically aren't going to be able to take all care of all of them by themselves. So you have to be constantly rotating between the different lanes, trying to take out enemies. And then you can also switch your ship's mode from like attack to build mode. And in build mode, you won't get shot, but you can put down towers around the map. So you have to physically go to where you want to place a tower. And most of your tower placement you'll do during the like build phase in between waves, so you don't have to be constantly like juggling that. But there will be cases where you're in the middle of a match and a tower gets destroyed by something, or there are more tanks coming from one direction than you were counting on, and you need to quickly throw down some more towers or something.
Cool.
And the big thing that's unique about this game is it brings like environmental destruction into tower defense, which I don't think I've ever seen in a tower defense game before.
No, the trailer was looking really chaotic.
Yeah, so there are like big, there are skyscrapers and stuff. You're playing as like aliens coming to basically just fuck up Earth and steal
right
all the resources or something. But you can blow up buildings, and those will actually fall over into lanes and like change the geometry of the map. So I haven't played enough of it to get a good sense of like how well you can use buildings like that as obstacles to reshape the map, because some things you can destroy and they'll actually affect the area around them, whereas smaller buildings you'll just blow them up.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you see lots of pieces of them flying everywhere and it's cool, but it's not doesn't really change the way the game plays. But I did find myself like blowing some buildings up so that my towers could shoot like across lanes, whereas normally that building would be blocking their line of sight. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
And I was just playing a preview build of the game that they sent us. I'm not sure when it's out. It's listed on Steam as like coming soon or something. But I'm going to try to put up an article about that in the near future with a bunch of GIFs of the environmental destruction and showing off like the ability upgrade system.
Very GIFable kind of game stuff.
Yeah.
Based on that.
So it's pretty fun.
Cool.
If nothing else, it's pretty cool to see like a tower defense game with that like looks really, really good like that. Yeah. Like I thought that Defense Grid was really cool coming from basically like desktop tower defense, like way back.
Early tower defense games the were good old very, days. Very basic.
Yeah, right? Very crude. And so to like to go from that to Defense Grid and then to this is like, you know, it looks really great.
It's very much a kind of a third person version of the same kind of experience you would get with Sanctum. Did you guys ever play Sanctum or Sanctum 2?
Oh, I know of it. Never played it, but yeah.
So I think Sanctum 2 is probably the better version of it. It's made by the developers who did Goat Simulator.
Right.
And they had modest success with the Sanctum games and then just insane success with stupid like game jam project that they did, right?
Yeah.
But in Sanctum, it's a combination of tower defense and first-person shooter. So you pick like a character class and then you run around on top of the kind of maze that you build or inside the maze shooting at the enemies as they come. And this is sort of like the third person shmup version of that, where instead of running around with a gun, you're a ship flying around and switching between your different weapons and dodging fire while you're building stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
I had no interest before, but just seeing an action for 30 seconds, I'm definitely going to check
it out. Not the best name, but
at least better. Has defense in the name. So it does have, gives you that.
There you go. You got something to hold on to.
But hopefully it will succeed in spite of the name.
Yeah.
Oh, and my favorite thing about it is the voice, the VO for like the human military people, who like the human general or whatever who's fighting against you, is I don't know the actor's name, but he's the voice of the narrator in Crackdown.
I know that commander voice.
And he also does the voice of the character in Samurai Champloo, if you guys ever watched that.
He's
the like government agent dude. He just has a great voice.
Super
he's
in hokey.
Like he's in like every anime and half of the video games ever made, so he's very recognizable, but
something we can all aspire
great
to.
Great voice.
Nice. Right on. Want to call out quickly Dodo UK just subscribed for 9 months in a row. So
welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for sticking with us. That's great. Anything else you guys been poking at, or is that
what about you, James?
Oh, you guys want to know?
What have you been playing?
You might have heard about this game, I don't know, like 100 years ago, Unreal was making. It's called Fortnite.
Fortnite.
Yeah, Fortnite is out, kinda, now.
It's been in development, 6 years?
Longer than that, probably.
Yeah, it's been in development for longer. It was announced about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It was going to be the first Unreal Engine 4 game, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it technically was the first one that they started making.
I played that game, like, 2.5 years ago at E3 Judges Week.
Yes, and like, this year I played it at E3 Judges Week. Yeah. So it's been kicking around a while in no small amount of private alphas and such, and I think what it is now is pretty cool.
What's the funny thing is now, is it actually out, or is it now just finally in open?
No,
it's like open beta or something.
It's Unreal's launcher's version of early access. Mm-hmm. It's not on Steam.
So we're past beta, but we're not at release yet.
It's a paid early access. When it releases, I believe the plan is still for it to be free to play. But right now you can, I think it's like $50 to get into the base level early access. And what's there, I think, is, if it's your kind of thing, probably worth it. How to explain this game? Tower defense is a good place to start, I think, because at its core, what you're preparing to do is a horde mode tower defense kind of thing. You're building forts out of these, using this really kind of intuitive build menu, out of floor pieces, wall pieces, and they all like snap to a grid, stair pieces, and traps. And these can all be sort of customized internally based on their own grid, so you can like... there are 3x3 squares making up each component, and you can kind of, if you knock out the middle square, it'll automatically put a window there. If you knock out the middle square and the one below that, it'll make a door. And,
that's cool.
You know, it's really easy. I mean, because you do that by pressing a button and then just pointing and clicking. So you're still like aiming. It never takes you out of like into a new interface. Like,
and is it third person shooter?
Yes, third person shooter. And so you assemble these forts. With some objective in mind, and a horde of husks, which are just zombies, come after you in the end. And you can do this with up to, I think, 4 people total, maybe 5. It's a good kind of more open-ended version of tower defense, especially when you take into account that each map is procedurally generated. So you might pick a wooded map, and you're just in this forest with all these kind of jutting kind of hills and mines and whatever, and it's this huge map that you have typically unlimited time to explore beforehand. Mm-hmm. And you'll smash trees, you'll smash rocks, you'll find mines with rare ores and minerals, and you'll find like weird one-off activities. One of my favorites is this, there are these kind of this blue gooey currency you pick up to power things in the world. And one of them is basically a mimic that turns into a game of whack-a-mole. So you'll try and pick up this piece of energy, and it'll transform into this little goblin that will then open little tiny little portals like in several places and pop out of one randomly. That's and cute. You have to like shoot him a little bit.
That initial build phase, it's kind of very survival game-esque, right? Because you're doing a lot of scavenging resource
can
gathering.
Can you die or be hurt?
You can. There's like mobs kind of dotting the landscape.
When I say survival game, I mean less on the survival part and more on like the resource gathering.
You don't have to eat. You don't have to drink. You don't have to like maintain your character in that way. But your resources between maps and missions are persistent. Mm-hmm. You're moving through a world map that, as you progress through it, the missions get harder and maybe have more complex goals or side goals and so on and so forth. It's just really hard for me to judge the game. I've spent like 20 hours in it total. I had my progress reset halfway through.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a fair amount.
But I've never, not once so far have I felt challenged. Mm-hmm. And I think for a game that encourages you to build and makes building elaborate forts really easy, almost every match ends this way. Like, we'll go out and just get all the treasure, and like we'll mine everything, and we'll just have so many resources and traps ready to go. And then we'll get to the build phase, and we'll build this crazy. I'll build a sniper nest up here. We'll reinforce these walls. We'll like try and because once you enter the build phase, you can see which direction the husks are going to come from, so you can kind of like plan in that way to funnel them in certain ways and knock down trees.
Classic tower defense.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it.
It is. I agree. But then, the husks come and the basic weapons you get in the beginning are like super, super powerful, at least like compared to how much damage they take to kill. And you can just wipe out horrors before they even touch your base. If you want, if you're playing with it, you know, nothing has ever been a threat so far. And I feel like,
are there difficulty tiers?
There are tiers, but it's just like to progress to that point takes a long time. You have to like do certain missions in order to unlock harder missions and so on. And there's no like hard mode this level as far as I've found, you know.
It's one thing that I appreciate about Killing Floor 2, which doesn't have any of that structure, right? Killing Floor 2 is just like start a match, choose a map, choose your difficulty setting, and then go kill stuff. It doesn't have any of that construction, but it does have you can by yourself determine the rate at which you're going to master the higher difficulties of the game. So you can start out in Killing Floor 2 and be like, okay, I'm going to be a support class, that's going to be my main class. I'm going to level up to, you know, level 20, level 25 to unlock all the abilities. And then you can start out playing the game on normal. And then as you get better at it, you go, okay, now I'm ready for hard. And I've unlocked a couple abilities that'll make it easier. And then once you get, you know, up to level 15, level 20, you can go, okay, now I'm ready for suicidal difficulty, where the enemies do new attacks and they do twice as much damage to you. And then there's like another setting above that where you have to be really good and have a coordinated team. But you don't have to just be like, well, this is super easy and I need to do 10 more missions at mm-hmm. the easy setting before mm-hmm. I'm allowed to do, you know, a harder one.
Yeah, it panders to, I think, a young, inexperienced audience, and it sort of like looks like a I don't want to say a kids game, but
it does, you know, have a cartoony
friendly
style.
It's cartoony, but and then your character's holding an assault rifle, like a literal assault rifle. It's not a cartoon assault rifle. It's got a great look. It's overwhelmed by some crazy, crazy progression systems. There's like 4 different kinds of XP or something that come in the form of loot that you have to manually apply to different heroes, which are your player characters, defenders, which are AI characters, like survivors, which you can are characters you don't see, but you put into squads, which affect your persistent stats, like in small ways. There are like something like 6 skill trees.
All right, bored now.
Yeah. And there's so much loot and abundance of that shit. It's like you're gonna get a lot of stuff quickly, but I worry about once it's actually free to play how that stuff, you know, pans out.
It sounds like a game that has been in development for too long.
Yeah, it's
like a lot of the stuff in the video that you pulled up and that you described, like with the way you build windows and doors and how it's kind of automated, seems really cool. It looks cool. It looks really intuitive, and that's the kind of thing that takes a while to figure out in development, right? I'm sure they overhauled that system a bunch of times, and that looks really cool. But I don't think I want 4 different types of experience required to progress through various skill trees and missions and whatnot.
I do want to just say that I think the game is a lot of fun once you get to the game, and if it ever does pose like a serious challenge, I'll be very happy, and I'm sure it will eventually. I just think, you know, it could use some kind of a nice trim to get players to that quicker.
Hopefully that's what they figure out in early access.
Yeah. So I'm holding out hope for that. Check it out.
The graphics really remind me of the Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare game, which was a surprisingly really fun
team shooter. I got really into that game.
I never played the second one, actually.
I didn't either, but
which was probably better. But the first one was shockingly fun.
Real quick, Sig Spring just subscribed, so thanks for joining us. I do want to shout one other game real quick. I'll have a preview tomorrow with new things I can't quite talk about quite yet. Let's see. Sorry, I'm getting the hang of this switchboard here. It's called Foxhole, and if you go to their website, I think you can get access right now to an earlier build of the game. But I would describe it as a game of company heroes, except everyone plays a single unit, and campaigns can last anywhere between 4 hours and 4 days, roughly.
Wow.
So, it's this isometric top down. It looks like an RTS kind of at a glance.
This is World War II?
Alternate history, Great War. So it's not tied to.
So it's World War One sci-fi.
It's like post World War. It's like if World War II happened in a different. I don't think it matters. They just want a World War looking thing to go with their game. But it's this really kind of ambitious thing where you don't necessarily even have to shoot a weapon the entire time you play. An important thing is to build communication networks. So there's watchtowers you can build, and everything is built with a finite amount of salvage that is sort of contested over in like the long haul. So you can build a network of watchtowers, and some players' job will literally be to sit there and watch, like, and wait for movement and like report that to other watchtowers.
Take your shift on the line.
Exactly.
So how many people are in a game?
120. But there are also like conquest modes, I believe, that are like up to 500 players on multiple maps at a time. The shooting itself is nothing special to me, but the fact that I can kind of role play I can literally be a supply runner and just like have a truck and take supplies to and from a forward operating base, or from a forward operating base to another one, or from a refinery, because you'll get salvage, you need to refine it into certain things and ship that off elsewhere. And supplies, which is what they're called, and you have to top off your forward operating bases with supplies, which are basically currency that you use to spawn there. So in order to like keep up a front on the front line, and these front lines are like real ass front lines, there's like constant like pops happening back and forth and the occasional artillery shell or something. It's really like people aren't just like running willy-nilly at one another like team deathmatch style. It's very conservative play. It's really cool in that way. So I haven't spent a ton of time with it, but I'll have more on that tomorrow. I just wanted to.
So it's basically like an RTS version of PlanetSide.
Yeah. PlanetSide is a good comparison.
That's really cool.
Definitely. Moving on from that, let's switch back into this the meat of the week, this game came out. What's it called?
It's a game called Pyre.
Pyre.
So, Wes, you reviewed it.
I did.
Bo, you've been playing it.
I played a little bit of it, yeah. Wes played significantly more. I've got maybe 4 or 5 hours into it.
It took me about 15 to finish it, I think. My my Steam clock is not accurate because I left it running a couple times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was probably the hardest game for me to review in the time I've been a PC gamer.
Why is that?
I haven't reviewed a ton of games, but I've reviewed, I don't know, maybe somewhere between 5 and 10. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. But this one was really hard to review because it is... I've never played a game like Pyre before, and I was constantly kind of torn between being really impressed with the craftsmanship of this game and some of its ideas and how much fun I actually had playing it, which was not a ton of fun. It's a gorgeous game. If you know the developer Supergiant, they made Bastion. That was their first game. It was a really breakout hit. It sold like several million copies over, you know, the past few years. Gorgeous game, really creative use of narration to kind of talk about what you're doing as you play the game. And Transistor, which was their second game, was kind of used that same concept, but with some twists. And I thought the combat in Transistor was incredible. It's really, really cool, smart, like tactical action RPG combat where you get all these abilities that do interesting things and then you combine them in ways that makes them totally different.
Okay.
And the effects of those abilities were really cool. So I thought that was a big step up for them from Bastion, which was a fun but much more mindless, like kind of just beat 'em up action RPG. Now, Pyre is like we've been calling it like wizard basketball, basically.
It really is like,
and so it's like, okay, imagine you're playing like 3-on-3 NBA Jam, except it's in this fantasy setting. The combat in this game are called rites, and the goal of the rites is for you to get this kind of magical orb into the opponent's pyre with one of your characters, either by running it in, or throwing it in, or jumping it in. And you get this big cast of kind of RPG-esque characters that they all play really differently, right? So you'll have, like, one of your starter characters is Jodariel, who's this demon woman with, like, these huge horns, super cool character design. And she's very, very slow, but she also has this huge aura around her, and the aura is what you use to like knock out enemy players by bumping into them. So obviously as a bigger character, she's much better offensively and defensively at taking out other characters, but she's super slow. And then you get other characters who can fly or can run really, you know, sprint really quickly or something, and so they are better at, you know, dunking the orb. And then they all have skill trees, so they gain some really cool abilities that mix and synergize well. But the big problem that I had with the combat, and I never really felt like it worked as well as I wanted it to, even by the end of the game, is that you're only controlling one of those three characters at a time, and the other two just sit on the field when you're not controlling them.
Right.
There's no AI for them. And so there's some degree of positioning you can do with them, and like you can bounce back and forth with your control relatively quickly, but it was just never fast enough for me to for it to feel quite right to me. Like it just always felt kind of off that there were these two characters just sitting there that you weren't in control of, and I just never liked that the balance there.
Does it make for like live chess kind of play? Like that's what I imagine it as, is you can only move one character at a time, so you have to, I don't know, it's almost like live turn-based. Does it have its own strategy and have its own kind of that emerges from
there's
that,
definitely or? Plenty of strategy there. The frustrations for me is when you're going up against an AI team that has like a fast character on their team, which most of the time there's gonna be at least one who's pretty fast.
Yeah.
If they get the orb and like knock out your character that you're controlling in the moment, or either you're kind of like in the middle of the map or something, they can cross that distance so quickly that by the time you kind of snap control to one of your characters who's back there, they're probably going to score on you. And of course you can try to combat that by just being better at strategy and where you place your units and stuff. But there were many times throughout the game where someone would just score on me so quickly that the game wasn't switching me to who I wanted to control quickly enough to stop them. I don't know. Did you have a similar feel for
it? A little bit. I mean, so part of it is that you, as a single person, are controlling three people. And while the computer also, it only moves one person at a time, like it's bound by the same rules, but because it's computer controlled, like it switches very rapidly and you would see them like throw the ball around, or and it felt much more like you were playing against a team of three rather than by yourself.
I would agree with that. And it wasn't even that hard, right?
Yeah, like, the game isn't really very hard. So it's not that it felt unfair. It just sort of felt weird. And so I definitely felt that too. And especially because on a lot of times, many of my strategies were basically just like set up two people on defense, and then one person would be my like scorer,
your runner, run. Exactly.
And it was pretty rare for me to like move one person up and then like pass over and then move them up and like do a kind of feint like type. It's the kind of thing that I wanted to do things that I would have done in, say, like a soccer match or a basketball match, where you like have one person moving, but the other people moving, and then having a handoff or a pass makes sense. Whereas this was basically just like two people stand back at the gate. Maybe one, I would have one positioned in the middle as like a sort of mid-tier defender, but the other one was doing all the running. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I definitely felt that too.
So it's, you know, it's, the combat is really gorgeous. The variety of characters you get and their abilities is really cool. But I felt like I was mostly, no matter what team I was using, and my strategy would differ based on their abilities, the actual way I was implementing that, like Bo said, would be pretty similar, where you would just have one character you're controlling most of the time, and if they get knocked out, you know, they have like a 5-second respawn or 10-second respawn, you just switch to another character and you're controlling them by themselves, you know. So that kind of bummed me out. And I think the bigger issue isn't necessarily that it plays that way, and it's that you're going to play those rights the whole game, and that's basically all you're going to do when it comes to combat. So the game is this very strangely divided the rights, which is this sports kind of fantasy sport, and then a visual novel where your characters are talking to each other, you're talking to them, you're making some very, very minor decisions about where you go in the world, but it's pretty inconsequential. So it's basically just click through dialogue, learn about the characters, learn about the world. And the writing is really great. Tons of personality, really interesting setting, works with the art tremendously well, I think. Like the world called The Downside is interesting, gorgeous, kind of mysterious. You don't actually get to explore it. You would just kind of hover over it and go, you know, go to places, but there aren't towns or cities or like NPCs really that you're going to interact with, that kind of stuff. And then you go to the rights, and then you do story, and then you do a right, and then you do story, and you do a right, you do story, you do a right. And that's the entire structure of the game, and it never varies from that. And probably halfway through, I was kind of tired of that, and then did it for another 7 hours.
Do you feel like the story carries you through that? Is it interesting enough, the characters there?
So in the end, I was really satisfied with the ending. And I was especially, again, going back to like how divided I felt on this game, I was really impressed with the craft of how they built to the ending. And it's an interesting game in that there's no game over screen. So if you fail in the rights, the game just continues no matter whether you win or lose. And that affects what happens to your characters. Oh, okay. And it affects the ending, but it's okay to fail. You might not be happy with your ending. And I only failed one right in the whole game. And it wasn't like a really crucial one. So it didn't end up impacting my ending. But I was left really satisfied with the endings for the story, for the characters, based on kind of how I'd played the game. And also left me really curious what would have happened had I lost more, had I made different choices. And I think the feeling I got from the way it wrapped up is that it could have been quite different. if I had made different decisions, had different things happen to my characters. So that felt, I was kind of gratified by that payoff of it feeling significant in that way. But I was pretty over just the structure being as monotonous as it was by the end of the game, because I didn't like how I was interacting with it on either half as much as I wanted to. You know, visual novels are a good way to deliver story, but I wanted some more RPG interaction there. Like, I wanted to be able to visit these places some more or have some extra layer of mechanic. Like, I don't know if a survival mechanic in the Banner Saga vein would have been a good fit for the game, but it would have given you something to kind of care about when you weren't in the rights. Mm-hmm. Whereas once I got far enough in to realize nothing new is going to happen in terms of how I'm interacting with it, I was just kind of beelining for the next right, get it done as quickly as I could, read some more character story, beeline to the next right. There's just kind of a feeling of inevitability for the back half of the game where you just can tell new things aren't going to happen. So even though I still cared about the characters and I still liked picking up more information about the world, it didn't have a kind of a feeling of adventure that you would hope for. And to the arc of your characters, it just feels like you know more or less how the rest of the game is going to play out, and it's just a question of getting there.
Yeah, I was wanting more of kind of like more adventure game elements where when you weren't in the rights, like whether it be
puzzles
or just even just having more dialogue choices to go through, like even the conversations you have, they're largely just you talk to someone and they tell you a quick story or tell you what's on their mind. And very rarely are you even like presented with asking them a handful of questions. So you're just like kind of just clicking through the story. And yeah, I wanted more choices. And the very few times that you did make a choice, it was like, do we take this path or do we take this path? And they would say, like, you might be able to find an item here, or you might like feel good about going this way. That small change was like very, very inconsequential. It was the difference between, yeah, getting an item that you would probably sell versus like getting an extra point of like speed or attack or something in the next right.
And there were choices that you make that were more significant than that, but it was much more about how you interacted with the characters that could affect their stories in some significant ways. But the interplay between the adventure story, you know, narrative half and the rights half is very simple. Like Bo said, like no choice you're going to make is like, oh no, we went to the wrong place and now we're in big trouble, or, you know, now we learn this really interesting thing. It's just like, no, you got +2 speed in the next right. Big whoop, like you don't really need it. So yeah,
to make a sort of weird comparison, like XCOM is a totally different game from this, but if you think about it, like XCOM has kind of two distinct game types. There's the
meta strategy.
Yeah, there's like the hard in-game when you're battling out and it is a turn-based tactical strategy game, and then there's the meta strategy of building your base and choosing what to research and how to develop your soldiers and all that stuff, and what you do in the shipbuilding mode and the where you choose to explore and all that stuff is very, very consequential on how well you do in the battle. And so I was hoping for kind of more crossover interaction.
Do you think it's
like
just
that,
like the contrast between going from this very active game to a very kind of, I don't want to say inactive is probably the wrong word, but it's the one I'm going to use. It's just
it's a strange split. I don't think I've played a game like Pyre.
Seems like a hard drop off.
So if you get really into the story, it's going to be worth playing for you. If you find the rights more fun than I think Bo or I did, you're also going to like the game. But it is it's a weird one.
It sounds like a weird one. I'm still interested in checking it out. So I don't know.
I'd say it's worth playing. It's worth giving a shot.
If you like Supergiant games, do you think you're just going to be inclined to like this?
I think
in general?
If you really appreciate the things you appreciate about their games more so than just like the combat is the tone of their games, the way they use music and voice and art, and they meld those things better than almost any other game developers I think I've ever played games from. Like, they have a really clear vision for how they want their art and their music to interplay and how that relates to characters and really key, like, emotional moments in their games. And they do that stuff, I think, better in Pyre than in either Bastion or Transistor. And those games already had fantastic art, had fantastic soundtracks. Yeah. Like, Bo and I have listened to the Bastion soundtrack probably a million times.
Really
right?
So good.
Pyre has phenomenal music, some interesting VO stuff. They put all that stuff together really well. There's a lot of thematic parts of Pyre that deal with... that kind of fit together with the way the rites play, to have to do with the stars and constellations, and music plays a part in that. All that stuff is really smart, and I think if that's the kind of thing that you appreciate from Supergiant's games, you'll love that element of Pyre, and it's absolutely worth playing.
Cool.
If you kind of didn't care about any of that stuff and you just thought the combat in Bastion or Transistor was really cool, I don't know how you'll feel about this one.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your very refined and informative thoughts.
It's a strange game.
Yeah, it's not what I would expect from them, but I'm glad at the very least that Supergiant kind of comes out with something very different every time. So I'm excited to see what they're...
True. I can't think of anybody who's been so consistent in kind of their how finely crafted their games are and how different they end up playing.
Cool. Before I type this next topic into our OBS interface, Bo, is Doomfist one word or two?
It's one word.
Doomfist.
Boom.
Oop. Okay. So, Bo.
Doomfist.
Next topic. What's up?
What's our topic now?
Can you guess? Doomfist. Give me the lowdown on what's going on with that
guy.
The
lowdown. Doomfist is coming out tomorrow.
Out of PTR, right?
Out of the PTR, yes. He's been on PTR for a couple weeks now in Overwatch. If it wasn't clear that we're talking about Overwatch now, in case you haven't heard anything about Doomfist.
Lay it out, Overwatch.
Where have you been? Doomfist finally ending his PTR run, coming to the live servers. I feel like we've covered Doomfist a fair bit. I guess I haven't really specifically been on the show to talk about him, but he's very cool. He's a melee-focused hero. His primary gun is not very strong at all, and instead he has very low cooldowns on his fist abilities, and those are relatively melee-focused. He has a big, like, falcon punch that knocks people back and does a ton of damage. You can basically one-shot squishy heroes.
I want a Captain Falcon skin now.
Oh my god.
That would be pretty rad.
If they don't do something that at least evokes Captain Falcon.
Surely Nintendo would sue them.
Well, just kind of hints at
just
it.
Close
a little helmet and some kind of
Captain Eagle.
Pointy.
Captain Eagle.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's really cool. I think it'll mix up the meta in an interesting way. He's a hero that's pretty unlike any others that we've had so far in Overwatch, so I'm not really sure what to... It's a cool time.
Do you know if he's changed any in the PTR balance-wise?
A little bit. When he first launched, he was kind of rightfully considered a bit overpowered. A fully charged rocket punch, which is his, like, bound to his left click. It's meant to be his, like, main attack outside of the little pea shooter that he has.
It had some pretty crazy range, right?
Yeah, a fully charged punch with that would go 30 meters in game, which is, like,
damn,
really far. Yeah. It's been toned down about, I think it was about 15 or 20%. So now at full charge, it goes like 21 meters, which is still a pretty solid distance, but it doesn't feel like you're coming from totally the other side of the match or other side of the map. And also his other two abilities. So he has a rising uppercut, which is basically just a Shoryuken. And then Seismic Slam, which is like, pounds down and has a little frontal cone damage that sort of sucks enemies in. So he actually plays a little bit like a fighting game character. Like, he has these combos, sort of. You, like, hit somebody up and then slam them down, and then it sucks them in and punches them. Or you can, like, you know, suck them in, punch, or suck them in and then do the uppercut.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit... Like, other heroes have had some combos, but not really a ton. So in that manner, he plays a little different. But yeah, so the uppercut, I think is largely the same, but the Seismic Slam has been changed a little bit. I think now it you can't quite go as far, or you can't get quite as vertical with it. It's when you're in the air, he can't use Seismic Slam to go even higher than where he is. You can only target places lower than his current height. Because before you were able to like fly up in the air and then sort of jump up even further and get some pretty crazy verticality.
Sounds like they're pulling back a little bit on just his mobility in being able to get up in people's faces from far away and very quickly.
Yeah, he's still very, very mobile, but they had to change it, tone it down just a little bit. I think the damage has largely stayed the same. They might have reduced it a little bit, but yeah, he's still... has the ability to pretty much the 200 health heroes. So a fully charged punch does 100 damage on hit, and then if they get knocked back into a wall, they take another 150 damage. So that
can kill a weak character.
Yeah, most of the DPS characters are either 200 or 250 health.
Ouch.
So yeah, he can pretty much just delete the non-tanks.
Ooh. So, and this, he's releasing tomorrow, to be clear?
Tomorrow, yes.
Tomorrow. So for the people in the chat wondering.
Thursday, yes.
July 27th.
July 27th, yeah. But another actually little bit of Overwatchiness that I can mention just got, not even really announced. I just caught it on the forums earlier today.
Good eye, Bo.
Patch notes?
Not even patch notes, actually.
Wow.
What it is on the Overwatch forum, somebody made a post suggesting a change to Junkrat. And
is it a bad change? I'm thinking about Junkrat it out as the topic.
It's a good topic, but it's a good change.
Dang it. All right.
It's a cool change. So somebody made the suggestion. They said that Junkrat should have less damage on his concussion mine in exchange for a lower cooldown on it. Because one of the big complaints with Junkrat is that he has very little mobility. His only real mobility ability is the Concussion Mine, which has an 8-second cooldown. It's relatively long. And then if you use it as a mobility move, you then don't have it in the fight. And so somebody basically suggested change that up, reduce the damage so you can't spam it twice in a row, but make it a short cooldown so you can use it more often. And so Jeff Goodman, principal designer of Overwatch, responded to this post and said, this is actually pretty close to what we've actually been testing. We don't have the official numbers of what they are working on, but he said on an upcoming PTR build, which I'm speculating could be as early as next week, but I have no hard info on that.
Right.
That's just based on like Doomfist is coming out tomorrow, which means the current PTR is coming to a close. Assuming they do one relatively soon, could be next week or in the next couple weeks. With that in mind, he said these changes will be on the next PTR whenever that happens. And the build that they're internally testing, which may make it to PTR, is giving Junkrat two charges on his concussion mine. I'm assuming also with a significantly reduced damage.
So that's a pretty big difference.
Yeah. Basically, it'll let him... Currently, you can use two, but you have to like put one down, let the cooldown tick all the way down, 8 seconds, and then use it, and then you can place one again immediately. Whereas this, you can place one, use it, and immediately use a second one, and then if you waited the cooldown at the beginning, you actually can have three, but that's more of a lesser case of when you would be using that. More they like... The ideas he suggested is you can use one mine to jump up into the air to like fight against a Pharah, and then you'd have the mine right there for the battle.
Oh, that's cool.
Or you can use one to jump into a fight and then have the mine to fight or do some damage and then use a second mine to get back out of there.
A mobility mine.
Yeah, because the mine is used. It does a fairly strong amount of damage, but it also knocks people back, and it is Junkrat's primary main mode of transportation.
Cool.
That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, it's a nice change. Junkrat sees very little play at high tier skill levels and in professional play. So hopefully this additional changes will give him a little more love.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've heard much about Junkrat anyway.
So. You know, for some reason, I can never keep Junkrat and Roadhog separate in my mind. I always conflate them. So for the first couple minutes you were talking, and I was like,
what the fuck?
Like, Roadhog doesn't, what?
He doesn't have a mind?
Yeah. I was like, what? No, like, I know it's been a long time since I played Overwatch, but something's not adding up here. And then I was like, it's the other one.
Yeah. Speaking of changes, that's not what I want. Looking ahead. I'm getting there, guys. I'm not Tom yet. I never will be Tom.
You'll never be Tom.
But speaking of changes, I want to look ahead to the rest of 2017. The podcast is changing.
We're in the lull right now, as we mentioned.
Exactly.
Calm before the storm.
Exactly. There's at our meeting this morning, we were like, "What's happening in video games?" And it took us a minute. There's some games coming out, but
I feel like we basically have a month.
I think September
is when all the stuff starts to kick off for the holidays.
Yeah.
Fall season.
And in previous years, I think, or at least like when I was in college, it used to be almost all of summer was a lull. And now we have maybe a month. But it's a bit of a relief, but it's also, it kind of takes you by surprise because I'm expecting something new or I'm expecting something to hit. But alas, we're kind of in a slow crawl towards the big fall.
These days, a game like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds can kind of just like appear more or less out of nowhere and then be like, oh, 5 million people are now playing this game. Cool.
Yep. And it's been fun to, we just put up, I think today I put up an updated list of the best kills. So if you're, even if you don't play that game, go watch that stuff because it's fucking hilarious. It's, that game is just the perfect tool for shenanigans and just weird physics comedy. Anyway, I want to talk about the rest of the year, what's coming and what we're excited for. So I know we barely have time to think more than, you know, 2 weeks ahead. I want to know what you guys are excited for the rest of the year. And if you can't think of anything, we'll just scroll through a list.
I think I'm going to need the list.
You're going to need the list?
I know there's stuff that I just can't bring up to the front of my mind. Okay, one game that I am looking forward to, but I don't know if it'll actually come out this year, is Heartforth Alicia, which is Metroidvania, been in development for probably 6 years, 5 years. They did a Kickstarter a few years ago, but it's just like gorgeous 2D pixel art and really lush animation. Looks very much like a late Super Nintendo game.
Can you say that one more time? I want to Google this.
Heartforth Alicia.
Heartforth.
Yeah. Like Alicia. Go forth with your heart.
That is not how I was expecting this game to be spelled. I was thinking like Heartforth, one word, and then Alicia spelled like E-L-Y-S-I-A.
Oh, like Alicia or something like that.
Okay.
Like some JRPG planet.
I was expecting something very like, very JRPG.
Alicia is the main character. But yeah, it looks like a Super Nintendo game. But with lots of effects you couldn't actually do on a Super Nintendo in terms of lighting and stuff. So Hollow Knight kind of came out of nowhere and like surprised us as this incredible Metroid-style game that will probably be the best game of its type released this year. But who knows? Maybe Heartforth Alicia will come out and blow some of us away.
Yeah.
If it comes out this year. I have no idea.
I mean, if anything, Hollow Knight renewed my faith in that you can still do new things and surprise, you know, with kind of an older template for games. Cool. Bo, anything coming to mind for you? And then we'll get up the list and run through it together so we can just be overwhelmed.
So two things that come to mind. One, I already touched on this game a little bit, but the XCOM 2 expansion, War of the Chosen.
That's a good one.
It's coming out pretty soon. I think it's end of August. Yeah. So actually just, you know, a couple weeks away. Pretty excited about that. And another is Tacoma.
Tacoma.
Which is out in 1 week.
1 week.
Holy cow.
Yeah, next week.
Yeah, it's very soon.
Might be less than 7 days. I don't know. It's next week, I think.
Friday. Well, I don't know. I know Friday is their like launch party, but that's all I really know about.
Very soon, though.
Yeah, this is the new game from Fulbright, who put out Gone Home, if you're unaware. Can you tell us what Tacoma is? What you know about
in the same vein as Gone Home, it is a you're exploring a space.
Wow.
In this case, space is
sold.
As you're exploring this space station, space station Tacoma, and you know, honestly, I don't know a ton about it. I've tried to shy away from playing.
I get you.
There have been demos. I've been at like press events where there was a demo available, and I deliberately didn't play it because I didn't want to have to like play through this section again when I got it, when I played it.
Right.
I loved Gone Home. I'm expecting it to be very cool. And to get that same sort of learning the story through exploration, but it seems they, from what I do know, is they have, so the space exploration genre has heavily.
That's what we need to rename it. Instead of walking simulators, space exploration.
This genre has heavily leaned on the audio recording. As a means of storytelling.
BioShock,
heavily pioneered by BioShock. I don't know if that was the first game.
Probably not. I think they were in the Shock games prior to BioShock.
Definitely popularized by BioShock, and this audio diary format has kind of become very tired in this genre, I feel like. I think a lot of people...
I think they're just tired, period.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. I'm tired of them.
Me too.
At least as far as I understand, one of the big challenges and goals that the Tacoma team set out to do was to do this storytelling in this format with basically making a new take on the audio diaries, doing it in an interesting way. I don't quite know how they have...
I have played the demo.
It's probably exactly like Prey, but with way more guns, right? Like,
that's pretty much it. You got it, Wes. You nailed it.
More guns solves every problem.
If you don't want to hear this, Bo, cover your ears. But I'll just like hint toward it for our listeners: is they use, I don't know exactly how to say this, but projected recordings of people in 3D space.
Holograms?
Jesus Christ, what? There's a word for it. There's holograms. So imagine an audio log.
I was familiar. I was aware that this was how they were doing it, but I've heard they've kind of like worked on it a lot.
An audio log, a hologram log that you can fast forward or rewind through or pause that takes place in an entire a series of rooms. So you might be on the same recording, but you're only witnessing the people talking in the kitchen. But if you go, rewind the recording and go to, the bathroom. Don't go to the bathroom.
Check if the toilet works, though.
You do got to check. If the toilet doesn't work, Steve. If it doesn't work.
We're docking 10 points.
You can kind of just see how these different conversations on the same timeline play out between different characters, mm-hmm. and scroll through it at will, and that seems really cool and interesting to me. So
I believe our space station expert Andy Kelly, massive fan of the Alien series, and especially Alien Isolation the game, has, I think he's played Tacoma or been playing it. I think he's reviewing it for us. So I'm sure that one, he'll have a good take on it, because exploring space stations is basically what he lives
space
for.
Space is his place.
It is his place. And two, he will definitely be checking on the toilets. So I imagine that will be featured prominently in his review. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, Andy did a feature for the mag that's also on the website maybe 6 months ago or something, about toilets in video games and how the detail of whether the toilet flushes properly is
pretty important.
A sign of how much
how
attention
much detail was
exactly
shown.
How much care is put into this world building.
So Tacoma, I'll list one of my most anticipated games, and this is something I never thought I would expect to hear myself, a grown man, say in 2017.
Don't you say Destiny?
I'm not gonna say Destiny.
Okay, cool.
I'm excited for Destiny, but Sonic Mania.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sonic Mania looks fucking good.
I'm pretty excited about Sonic Mania. If nothing else, I'm really excited about the soundtrack because it is incredible.
Yeah. What is exciting about Sonic Mania is that, now I don't know the names behind this, Wes, you probably know this better than I do.
Christian Whitehead is the only one that I know off the top of my head. Yeah.
So it's sort of this ragtag team, the motley crew of game developers who, a lot of them had worked on like fan games or ports of some kind, mm-hmm. prior to Sonic Mania. And these are people who made fan games that were like, if you played them, were pretty well regarded, at least better regarded than a lot of what Sonic Team has put out.
They developed like better 2D physics engine for Sonic than like Sonic 4 had, you know, or like some of the official games had.
And Sonic Mania, which comes out mid-August, I believe.
I think it's the 15th.
Yeah. So pretty soon is essentially a sanctioned fan game with a budget that may just usurp what it means to be a good Sonic game from this point forward. It could. I've played a few levels at a few events, and it both feels and sounds and plays better than I can remember, you know, Sonic
doing
playing.
Any of those things.
Yeah, some really, because I played through the same level several times, and it had some really winding, complex level design that rewarded not just going fast and like zipping through it and whoa, I barely survived. It rewarded exploration and using speed to find hidden paths and secrets and faster routes, and even if you took the time and went slowly, there was a lot to see and enjoy. It just felt like a different kind of platformer every time I went through the level. And there are a lot of weird one-off gimmicks and interesting level design treats that I don't want to talk about just because or play more of, because I just want to be kind of delighted and surprised by them when it comes out. But you bet your ass, I'm excited for Sonic.
It's a game that about 80% of me is really excited and hopeful to see just like knock it out of the park.
But
because I love the idea that Sonic, or that Sega took people's complaints about Sonic, all the bad games that have come out of that series for years, and actually took those fan comments to heart, went to the fans who understood it better than the current, you know, developers did, and like let them make a really amazing game, right? Like, we don't see stories like this coming out of the fan game community ever, or at least not, it's very rare for them to actually get the platform, not just like a sanction to not get their fan game, you know,
shut down,
right? But like to actually elevate it with production and, you know, and budget behind them and marketing and all that stuff. So I'm really hopeful for those reasons that it's a smashing success, that it's a great game, and that it succeeds. And then like the rest of me just, it has this like sick fascination for the Sonic cycle, where every time it looks like there's going to be a good Sonic game, it's actually still shit.
Yeah.
So there's a small part of me that, like, not 20%, 5%.
I mean,
still like has the Schadenfreude of wanting to see it be bad. But the rest of me really hopes that it's amazing.
You can just place that evil, cynical hope that we all feel and desire and, you know, feed on. Place it on Sonic Forces, which is like the 3D one.
Yeah, it's fucking this up.
Whatever. You can make a Sonic avatar with a gun or something. I don't know. It's geared to be awful.
I want
to
be the Platinum Sonic from whichever game he's in.
Oh my god.
With a gun and what was the butt? Cream the Rabbit? Yeah.
Oh my god. I don't want to talk about Sonic anymore.
Cream the Bunny, Cream the Rabbit.
Jesus,
that's an
Lord.
Actual character.
It is. I know.
Did you know what you were doing, Sega? I hope that you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, blew it.
When
yeah,
you
blew
named
it.
The character Cream the Rabbit,
oh,
you have
God.
Ruined the internet for all of us.
You decorated. Anyway, I can't go into that, the dark side of Sonic right now. Mm-hmm. I know too much. I've seen too much. Real quick, I want to call out Kootness for subscribing with Twitch Prime. I've been chatting with Kootness in our Discord a little bit, and Kootness has been watching me play some Dark Souls 2, which I forgot to mention I'm now playing because it's all I have been playing for the last like month is more Dark Souls 2.
So of course you'd forget it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's hokey.
It's a pretty good game.
I think once I finish, I'll like come back on the show.
Do you still feel like, would you rank them 1-3-2?
Yes, I think there. If you, and I've yet to get to the DLC, which I've never played before. Mm-hmm. But Scholar of the First Sin is a better version of Dark Souls 2. It still has way too much going on, or it's just like bloated and a little hokey, too hokey sometimes, too video gamey sometimes. So it loses some of that mystery and mm-hmm. sort of, I don't know, believability. But it has some of the better ideas that are executed better in Scholar of the First Sin this time around.
Cool.
So
should we look at a list of some of the
yes. One more
games?
I want to call it was Digger NJLP just subscribed, so welcome. Thank you for giving us your money. Just kidding. We're going to pop up a list here. This is by no means complete because there are games coming out all the time. But let's just scroll through it if that works. Whoop. Whoop. This is opencritic.com, which I use to kind of get a glance at what's coming out, at least. Big ones I want to call out. Sundered, Metroidvania-style game coming from the folks who made Jotun. Lovely animated art style. Here's a big one. The Long Dark. I thought we'd been playing that for a while.
It's been in early access for 3 or 4 years.
Yes, but now we're getting the, I think it's the first part or chapter of the single player story mode.
That's
so
cool.
That looks really cool. Column is to see him. Oh, look, Lawbreakers.
That's a game.
Class-based arena shooter coming from Cliffy B
Simulator.
Blue Hole
is the PUBG.
I'm mixing my shooter devs. Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, if you played the first one, it's a good collection of Mega Man games.
They're
emulated very...
Really accurate emulation, yeah.
Nice.
It's cool to have those on PC.
Hellblade, Ninja Theory's new sort of... I don't want to call it a budget narrative game, but they've made it deliberately smaller and shorter to sell it at like $30. Hmm. So that seems cool.
I want to call out West of Loathing.
Yeah, do it.
West of Loathing is from the makers of Kingdom of Loathing, which is a pretty old school, I want to say browser-based sort of MMO.
Mm-hmm.
I played a fair bit of it like 10 or 12 years ago or so.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
High school when that
probably
came out?
Yeah, I don't even remember. But it was a real cool, very, you know, hand-drawn art style, very irreverent humor, and I haven't played any of West of Loathing yet, but I believe Chris Livingston is playing it right now.
Chris is playing it, yeah.
And he says what he's played so far, he really, really likes what he sees. It seems very fun and
cool.
Kind of interesting.
James, have you played Absolver at all?
I played a demo a while back. Is that on this list?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sam from our team, I know, has played a couple times and really, really dug it.
I know it'll be kind of my jam because it's sort of that tail-based combat, one-on-one, lock-on, rotate around each other that Dark Souls does so well. This time, more hand-to-hand, kicking and punching. And the online, I can't remember exactly how it works, but you will fight other players online, and by fighting them, that's how you will learn moves you don't know. And you can then assemble like a move list and combos, and
that
over time,
cool, yeah,
build a complex, you know, repertoire of kicks and punches. What else pops out to me? Arc is moving into 1.0. Moving on. Observer is a huge one for me.
From the developers of
Layers of Fear, which I really didn't like. I hated Layers of Fear.
But you're excited about this one.
Some people called it like a horror masterpiece. James was like,
no fucking way. Oh man, I'm getting angry at it. No fucking way. But Observer seems to be a much more a better fit for the kind of game they're experienced making, which is Observer. I played a preview about 6 months ago at this point. You can read that on PCGamer.com. We'll have more on Observer soon because it was recently announced as coming out on August 15th. A first-person cyberpunk, I say hesitantly because it uses cyberpunk aesthetic.
Grungy sci-fi.
And you play a detective or like an enforcer of some kind, an observer, who is trying to solve a mystery. And observers do this by basically plugging themselves into other folks' heads using like a little.
That's very Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah. So, and that leads to when you do that, there are sequences you'll kind of. Layers of Fear was first person corridor walking, horror happens at you kind of thing, with some really cool effects, graphical effects, and really cool mind altering sequences. It makes sense, totally makes sense, like to play with that kind of stuff in different people's psyches.
I bet at some point in that game, somebody's brain firewall will mess up your brain and screw up your HUD.
It'll restart for updates or whatever, or something while you're jacked in. XCOM 2, which we mentioned, Life is Strange Before the Storm. People are big on Life is Strange. I still have to go back and finish that series. I have one episode left.
I'm more interested in the sequel being kind of more of a, I guess, more of a departure. Like, they haven't really said exactly what they're doing with the sequel.
Yeah.
But they are doing Life is Strange 2.
Yeah, okay.
As far as I understood it, unless I was confused, I think they're doing a Life is Strange 2, but they haven't said, whether that'll be the same characters or what. This is kind of...
I would hope they depart.
Before the Storm, this is like a prequel?
This is a prequel series. I think it's a three-episode series of some kind. It's shorter. I know that for sure, but hopefully it's worthwhile. We'll see. I'm excited to check it out.
I am really pumped for Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yeah.
That's one that I couldn't think of off the top of my head, but I played the entire first game co-op. Loved that experience would like to do the same with Original Sin 2. I think you can play it 4-player co-op
this
time.
I'm pretty sure you can.
But I will almost certainly not do that.
That'd be hard to arrange.
just getting one friend on a timetable where we could both play that game. And, it took us months to finish it. But it was really fun to play it together. It's a cool way to play it both, because it has elements of in the story where you can kind of disagree with each other's choices.
Yeah.
And just makes combat really cool because you can each have your own specializations and, get to help each other out. So that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
And I think that game with writing from Chris Avellone and all the extra work they've put into it is going to be a great RPG.
I hope so. Right on. Dishonored expansion. That sounds pretty cool. We haven't really seen that in action yet, but we've heard some good stuff.
Maybe they had a trailer at E3.
Yeah.
Probably look up.
Yep. Cuphead, finally.
Finally.
Oh, Total War Warhammer 2. It's a big PC thing.
I'm not as excited about that one. Like, I really like Total War Warhammer, but this one isn't going to be a dramatic departure. No. The one thing they are doing new in Warhammer 2 is they have like a totally new endgame system at play, which if they kind of pull off what they're aiming for with it, I think could be really rejuvenating for playing a Total War campaign, because once you've been 10, 20 hours deep into one of those things, it's kind of just like you're just marching towards controlling enough of the world to win. And it's either inevitable that you're going to win, or it's just like a slow slog through. Okay, now I have to go defend this province from the AI while I'm taking this other one. But you know how it's going to play out. But this one has a more nuanced end game with some different ways to win. I think taking a bit of inspiration like from Civilization there, where you can have your different paths to victory. Mm-hmm. So I hope that melds really well with the Warhammer gameplay.
And here we are moving into just a very busy October. What do we have?
Yeah.
Forza Motorsport 7, Middle-Earth Shadow of War, The Evil Within 2, South Park, The Fractured But Whole, Destiny 2. Wait, why is that? Okay, yeah, for the PC, it says September 8th here, but for the PC, it's like October 27th, I think. Same day, Wolfenstein 2,
that
Assassin's
one I'm
Creed
excited
Origins,
about. Yeah.
Origins.
Wolfenstein.
Me as well. That game looks pretty great. If it's anything like the first, I'm sure it'll be a fun time.
And you got to play some Origins, right?
I played probably 2 hours of Assassin's Creed Origins over E3.
And was your takeaway better than the last few, but still...
Better than the last few. It's really going to come down to the storytelling in this one. Because it feels like it plays like Assassin's Creed. It feels streamlined. It feels easier to pull things off. And you have as many options as ever in how you do that. But there's definitely, it feels like The Witcher. The world is big and flat and beautiful. And you get quests this time. You have loot. You have a lot of these systems that are more RPG than Assassin's Creed has ever
been.
And
they talked up some of the kind of Far Cry elements there too, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like weather and animals. And
kind of stuff. So it's getting that kind of cross-feature Ubisoft goodness.
It is becoming the Ubisoft game for the next generation.
But if the story's good, or it has at least good side quests and some interesting, it does interesting things in that world, I'm sure it'll be exactly what that series needed, or could be a step in the right direction.
You know what that series really needed?
What's that?
To take a break so we could have another fucking Prince of Persia game.
God,
finally.
Yep.
It's been like 10 years.
I went back and bought the the it was just called Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, 2008.
Mm-hmm. The kind of cel-shaded looking one that people gave a lot of crap for being
divisive game.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was fantastic.
Any other callouts?
What's on the next page? Is there anything that's gonna?
There's some stuff. December? There's Call of Duty World War II, which I don't know how to feel about. Crackdown, Need for Speed, Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'm very excited to play more of that. See the campaign.
Scalebound is not coming.
It's not. That's definitely a whole Dead Island 2. Also,
these are now just generic 2017.
It's kind of died off into. Everything.
Yeah, these are without a hard release date.
Battlefront 2 was probably the last
the
one.
Final
squeak,
big one.
Squeak in there. Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah. Excited for that, for the campaign, but also because future maps, all that stuff will be free. And having played a bit of it at E3, the blasters. People gave me so much shit for calling them lasers. Tell you what, whatever.
What do they shoot again?
They shoot blasters. It feels like they're weightier and have a bit, not exactly, some of them have recoil. They feel like these big, like, machines that are on the verge of exploding rather than just kind of, the first Battlefront, you could get that starting blaster and just aim down and just across the way.
Yeah, very pew-pew.
Yeah, shoot without any recoil, without consequence.
It's kind of ironic that when we first saw Battlefront or knew DICE was making it, I think my reaction, a lot of people's reaction, was like, oh man, I hope it's not like just Battlefield, but Star Wars. And then after it came out, it was like, this should have been more Battlefield.
A little bit more Battlefield. So I'm definitely excited for that. It feels like the what it should have been to start. It's going to have, you know, maps from and characters from across the entire timeline of Star Wars.
The old Battlefront games for as kind of goofy they were, like, physics wise and stuff, like they were kind of budget shooters to some extent, right?
Yeah.
They always had really fun class systems and like a variety of mm-hmm. weapon types and stuff between the different factions, so I'm excited to see them bring that back, you know, like higher fidelity, having your heavy soldiers and your rogues and all that stuff. So
it'll be fun.
I think it'll be a good game.
If there's nothing else to call out, why don't we just move into the final portion of the show, the Twitch chat Q&A.
Deathmatch.
to the deathmatch, where one of us leaves this room in a body bag. In the chat, if you are a subscriber or a member of the PC Gamer Club, which is a really good deal, you should go to club.pcgamer.com. I'll put it in the chat right now. For like $5 a month, you get access to our Discord. You get a digital subscription to the magazine. You get a free game each month. You get wallpapers, very, very, very rare wallpapers of Geralt in a bathtub. What am I missing? You get a free bookazine.
We'll give you James' phone number.
Yeah, you can come to my house and hang out with me. Please come visit me. You big one, Noah, you get an ad-free experience on PewsyGamer.com. So,
of course.
And we're going to be doing more stuff with the club as time goes. Like, we want to start doing more community, games together, that kind of stuff. We have ideas in the works that just take some time to arrange and pull off. And half of our staff not being on vacation where they are right now. But
we're a small team, and you know, getting things going is sometimes takes a little time. But we have very good intentions with the club. We want it to be a cool place.
And I think if you actually care about the magazine, which I would hope you would, because as much as we put stuff on the website, like there are exclusive features in the magazine. The art director for PC Gamer is phenomenal. The layout always looks really good.
I love it.
It's probably cheaper to get it through the club than it is to buy it. Like, not to
discourage you.
Discourage you from buying the magazine by other means.
But if you
losing the company money.
If you don't want, if you're not just like set on not having a stack of if you're just not the type of person who wants that kind of thing, print media in your house because you're a minimalist and you drink out of a white cup and live in a white apartment with like
this is got weird.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's like I'm the portrait of a serial killer. If you're a serial killer and you don't want any physical magazines in your house, it's like just $5 a month. It's worth it alone for that.
You can pay $5 to not see ads on our website and to look at ads in a digital magazine instead.
Boom. Boom.
You guys remember how fun 90s magazine ads
were? Oh, they were so good.
Oh, my God. So I want to say send us your questions. We're going to spend the last 15 minutes or so answering them. Tag PC Gamer in Twitch chat. If you're a member, subscriber, we'll get to you first. But if you're not, we will if, you know, we have time. But so don't lose hope. You know, there's still a chance for you in the world. So yeah, send us your questions. We got a couple rolling in now. Let's see. I don't know if I can help you here, Airmore, but Airmore asks, been playing Hollow Knight and discovered I'm bad at platformers. Any tips? And don't say it. We're not that kind of person.
Oh.
Don't say it.
I was like, what would I even say? Get good would not have come to the front of my mind until you warned me not to say it.
I would say if you're not playing with a controller, do that.
Yeah.
Definitely
play that game with a controller. There's not a, like, I guess you're kind of platforming throughout all of Hollow Knight, but a lot of it isn't super risky. You know, you're kind of just traversing the environment. So there are abilities that you get in that game to make it easier to traverse certain areas and that make it possible to traverse certain areas, right? Like you need a wall jump, for example, to get to a lot of places.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have some of the abilities that you need to make some of those segments easier. If you're trying to do some kind of like spike dodging part that's really tough, maybe think about waiting and coming back to it later when you have an ability that might make that a little bit simpler.
Movement gets easier as you progress through that game. You'll get more abilities that will make it a breeze.
You can equip, if you can find the right charm, you can equip a charm that makes you gain health gain soul when you take damage and you use soul to like rejuvenate your health. So that was a really important one for me because that made survivability much better because every time I got hit, that was like a third of a heal basically that hit. So that's a good one.
Cool. Hopefully that helps. Deej Bruce, Butts in Discord asks, hoodie when? You know, that's something we mention a lot in the office is we would love merchandise of some kind. And I can't confirm or deny anything right now, but it's something we want and we know people want. So
I mean, I think we can confirm that we don't have them. We're not holding out on you.
Sitting on a pile of them right now.
That would be cool. Hopefully we make
them. I want a hoodie. I worked here for 2 fucking years. I don't have a hoodie. God.
You should have a hoodie.
I should have a hoodie. Moving on. Let's see. What do we got? Any news on The Last Guardian for PC? Never gonna happen. Sorry.
You can probably emulate it in 20 years.
You could do that. Legally. Make sure you own a copy. What do we got here? Oop, Twitch is jumping all over. JBJ Blaze, who has been around a long time. Will free Twitch subs ever be included in the PC Gamer Club? Also, did Tom take your beard with him? Lastly, what do you think of Game of Thrones season 7 thus far? And would you look forward to season 2 of its Telltale series? Thanks. Wow, a lot of things going on there. Free Twitch subs? We can't rule that out. I mean, like, that would be a cool thing to include.
I think the answer is don't know.
We don't know. We want to hear what you guys want. Like, we want to hear what the ideal club membership is for you. So
definitely not off the table.
Send anything you got our way. Tom did not take my beard. I left.
You sure he didn't like come in the night? And
he sort of did though, because the weekend after he left, I was not anxious because he was gone, but I was just like with my beard a lot, and I was like, oh my god, this hurts, and I'll shave it. You know what? It's hot. I'll shave it. So Tom is sort of indirectly responsible. And Game of Thrones season 7. A lot of questions here.
I haven't watched it yet.
I've seen it. It's Game of Thrones still.
I like it so far.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm into it.
Season 2.
Did you play the Telltale game?
It's fucking bad. I didn't like it at all. Some people might. I think it's just not an interesting part of that world, or at least didn't detail an interesting part of that world, and it felt very ancillary and just like bolted on. But other people might have different thoughts. I don't know.
I want a good Game of Thrones RTS. That's the only Game of Thrones game I'm interested in, really. Absolutely. Is a Total War Game of Thrones.
And there's been none.
There have been attempts, but they're not good.
There is an RTS that wasn't great, but there are probably, I know there are mods, like there's a total conversion for Crusader Kings that is probably great. Crusader Kings is one game I've never really dug into because it's so complicated, and I probably will someday, but I would love a kind of Total War or Civilization game set in that.
It's weird it hasn't happened yet. Probably because it doesn't have as broad appeal as, you know, something like a Telltale game or the RPG they made, third-person RPG that some studio made five years ago.
And more expensive, too.
Yeah, definitely. But, oh, who's this? Tom R. Marks.
Get out of here.
Asks something that I already answered. James says, Scholar of the First Sin influenced my ranking of the Dark Souls 2 within the series. It's edged it ever so slightly upward. The DLC may change that. I think overall, again, like I said, it's just too fat and inconsistent.
It's a long game.
It keeps going. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm very like happy to be playing it now as a cultured man as opposed to a whatever I was, 23-year-old who didn't know anything. Now I'm complete. let's see. X Macho Man X asks, what are your guys' favorite non-PC games? What?
What's that?
I don't know what that means. That's a lie. We talk about Nintendo a lot.
We do.
Talk about
old
console RPGs a lot.
Yeah, recent memory, Breath of the Wild is an easy pick.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Final Fantasy IX, Halo 3.
Good picks. Yeah, Halo 3 was never on PC. That's right.
Sadly, no.
Oh, for me, Metroid Prime. God, I love that series. Love that series. When I saw the logo at E3 for Metroid Prime 4 pop up, I lost my shit. Just seeing a word with a number.
The number 4 in like Arial.
It was the least they could have done.
I was actually way more excited for the Samus Returns 3DS game.
Yeah.
They like appeared out of nowhere.
That's cool. I just don't want to open my I don't want to get my 3DS out again.
I sort of hope that they're like put it on Switch too.
Me too.
But
that's my hope. We'll see.
I'm totally down
just
for that.
Play Hollow Knight on your personal computer, Bo. God damn it, you have one. Play it on there.
But we have a lot of favorite non-PC games. We're by no means live playing in a vacuum. All these games influence and have a conversation with one another.
One of the reasons I delidded my CPU so that I could overclock the hell out of it is so that I can do some really good emulation in the near future. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but I am psyched to try out the Breath of the Wild on Simu, the Wii U emulator.
That resolution.
Run it without the frame,
so good.
Without the frame drops that I had.
Oh, yeah. That one forest is pretty rough slideshow. Sig Spring asks, when are you going to be more active on Steam? I'm not exactly sure what that means. Like our Steam group, maybe. It's not our kind of main hub of community effort.
The Steam's like community tools, unfortunately, are
pretty dated.
Like it's moderating that Steam group is kind of impossible, and it's not worth the time spent in it. So I think we would much rather build up our community around Discord and around Twitch. And the Steam is maybe at some point we'll use it to organize games or something, but don't expect
that's not our hub to be our hub.
Yeah.
I mean, we still put our recommended games on there. We'll update our curator page. We'll still do some stuff on there, but you know, quickly here, Kunifu. Oh my God. 17 months in a row subscribed. The Tom era may be over, but my sub lives on.
Welcome
Thank
back,
you.
Kunifu.
Aww, means a lot. Means a lot. Couple more questions down here. If I missed your question, I'm sorry, by the way. Thoughts, Deej Bruce asks, thoughts on PSN Now on PC? I think that's the streaming service, PlayStation Now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you guys used it?
I never did. No.
No.
I haven't used it, but I feel like I remember reading about somebody using it, and they said like it's kind of fine.
I think it works fairly well.
It does.
I don't know if they're really doing much with it these days. Like, I think they've added some games to it in the past.
Yeah, you can play some PS4 games now, so that's the big update. I haven't used the app on the PC in a while, and the last time I did, it was pretty buggy. It would freeze inexplicably, and I couldn't launch it after a certain point, so I stopped using it. But when it did work, I was playing Resistance 3 with a controller with almost no noticeable lag, granted very good connection, mm-hmm. Not Wi-Fi direct. So if you have the network infrastructure and you have the desire to play the games on their list and you have the money for like the $20 a month subscription or whatever it is, that seems like an easy way to kind of dabble without fully committing to, you know, PlayStation 4 if you're interested. If you can play Bloodborne on a PC, that's like, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Or Demon Souls.
Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. Where's that Demon Souls remaster? Let's look through these. We could take time for maybe one more. Did I miss? Favis doesn't say you subbed. Oh, I'm not going to ask that, Favis. Jeez, gross. oh, here's one.
It's not Twitch After Dark, guys.
Yeah, Christ. If you Favis, I don't know how to say your name. If you have to get rid of any game genre from the planet, what would it be and why? Seems kind of a cynical, mean question.
Does this include like the games that have been released in that genre?
I guess this is just, what is our least favorite genre is what this question boils down to.
I mean, if I'm just going to say like stuff I don't really play, it would probably be just sports games.
Yeah. There's not a huge...
Like I loved me some NFL Blitz back in the day, but yeah. I'm not an active sports game player. So.
Okay.
The thing is there is a huge market for those. Not so much on PC, but... They're very popular. Less, games,
yeah, I'm not thinking about like the millions of people who.
What
love
can he
Madden.
Do for the greater good? Which genre can I remove?
I don't know. Bo? That's a tough question.
Maybe class-based first-person shooters.
Don't you dare!
I'm just a suggestion, just a thought. No.
Because if the games that have been released so far got to stay, but it was like no more could be made after this, like. I'd kind of be leaning towards like open world action games because it's so overplayed to me that the you know how many of them are coming up with the new and interesting ideas I feel like is pretty small compared to like just prettier versions of what has happened before. But then something like Zelda comes out and like blows that assumption away. So who knows?
I agree. If I could wipe one slate clean and start over. Like, if I got rid of a genre, but the agreement was with the genre leaders, the genre board.
The genre gods.
if the agreement was, I'm going to get rid of the genre and all the games that came with it, but you can make it again better, faster, stronger.
Starting over.
If you can start over, it would be MOBAs. And I know Heroes of the Storm is probably... The best expression to me of that genre, at least maybe not from a super competitive level, but I would just like to see it evolved in such a sort of a non-linear way, or I don't want to say convoluted, is a weird appendage, this mod on Warcraft 3 with a big following, and it was this really ambitious sort of like inherently messy kind of game
by its virtue of being a mod,
and having so many characters and being like touted as like a competitive game and like having to be balanced. I don't know. I would just love to see what comes out of the wreckage of the MOBA.
I think that, that's an interesting point because a couple months ago, Tom was writing about that game Master X Master or something. Mm-hmm. And literally like his headline or first line of the article is like, Master X Master is a new MOBA. Oh, and you've already stopped listening. Like, whereas it actually kind of did some cool new stuff, but the genre is both overplayed and tired and like sort of done that there's not a lot of interest in new ones. And
still very popular, but
certainly very popular, but not a lot of space for new innovation. And so if they were to kind of burn it all down and start over with what's known, I think that some interesting stuff would come out of that.
I agree. Because it was my idea.
Brilliant idea, James.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Anyway, that's about all the time we have this week. If you want to see more, if you want to see the show in past weeks, you know, go to pcgamer.com/tag/podcast, go to youtube.com/pcgamer. Subscribe with us right now if you're listening on iTunes or wherever else. Go at twitch.tv/pcgamer. We're here every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. But, you know, don't feel like you have to be here. If you do want to, you know, get your questions in, again, become a subscriber on Twitch or join the PC Gamer Club at club.pcgamer.com. And I think that's going to do it for our first post-Tom show. Can I get a rating out of 100?
Out of 100?
On the PC Gamer scale. Be honest. Don't be honest.
I don't know how our scale applies to you as a human being.
7.5.
As a person. I'm going to give you a 90.
Thank you, Wes. Yeah.
I was going to give him like a 17. No, I'm just kidding.
That's unplayable.
Cancel. I hope
that's
unplayable. That's unplayable.
But I would argue that a 17 you like have to play because it's like because
you're curious.
You have to know.
You're like something deep, something deeply wrong.
Oh happened. My god! I'm getting so many scores from Twitch the chat now. I got a 15. I got a 69. Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Got a 90. I got an 11 out of 10. Great feedback, everybody. But again, I want to put out a final call before we sign off. Show's going to change, but we want to hear your ideas. If you're in Discord, you know, shout at me. My name is Ted Danson in Discord right now, so if you can't find me, that's where I'm at. Send me your ideas. DM me thoughts. And
what have you become without your beard?
I don't know, man. Identity crisis. We want to know what you guys think we should have in the show moving forward, what kind of format it should take. Maybe a different time. Anything you think we need to do or change, we want to know how it's going. Because I'm not Tom, and none of us are Tom. And none of us can be Tom.
Tom is your.
And we need to accept that. So any feedback is welcome. But anyway, thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next time on the PC Gamer Show. Have a good one.
See ya.